Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We're going to begin our program today by taking a look at maternal mental health and its effect on children. There's some new research out that took a look at poor mental health before and during pregnancy. And there were some interesting findings relating to that. And one of the principals involved in it is our guest today. Whitney Wedd is an assistant professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. She's also the co-director of BioPOP, Integrative Biopsychosocial Research in Population Health. So I'm really grateful to have her with us today and certainly invite you to join in with your questions or comments. Maybe you or someone else close to you dealt with mental health issues during or after a pregnancy. It certainly was a situation in my own family with my own wife, as a matter of fact. And she wouldn't mind us talking about that. Maybe you have some comments you'd like to share as well. How hard do you think it is to get help? That's another good question that you might want to ask or think about. And join in at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. Talk@wpr.org. Whitney Wedd, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you so much, Larry. I'm thrilled to be here.
Is this a big problem? I mean, do we see this in many women?
We do. We do. Actually, about 10 to 20% of women experience postpartum mental health problems. And unfortunately, a lot of them are not treated. So it is a big problem, and we need to really pay attention.
And you kind of study this sort of interconnection between physical and mental health, right?
Correct.
And the family over time.
That's right.
Why are these areas of overlap so important to understand?
Well, because how we feel affects what we experience physically. And also, if we're in poor health, that also can lead to mental health problems. So they're interrelated, and we need to study them both.
And there really have been some sad, certainly tragic stories over the years of women who've suffered from extreme postpartum depression and end up harming themselves or maybe their children. That's a pretty tiny percentage.
Yes.
I expect. But they always get a lot of attention. Those are the things you read about or see on the news. Do these very public tragedies create more of a stigma for women to seek help, you think?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think it definitely raises the issue in a way that I think is important. But it's only one part of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. You know, you said yourself, you know, these are the extreme cases, and they really are. Most women experience the baby blues at mm-hmm. some point within the first 10 days after they deliver. It's very, very common. What's different is, you know, when women experience these symptoms for more than 2 weeks, that's really when it becomes a problem. And then, you know, these extreme cases are very rare. But we do, I think it highlights the importance of mental health in the postpartum period in general, but we tend to hear about more of the extreme cases.
But even if they're not extreme cases, they can have sort of long-term effects, I would guess, or I think, on the family.
Absolutely. There's no question about that. We know that children who are exposed to parents who are in poor mental health end up getting mental health problems themselves. They often have somatic symptoms. They end up having stomach aches and headaches. And so for the children's sake, we mm-hmm. really need to try and address these problems.
And so you took a look at that in part in your study. Tell us about the study.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to talk about that. So we know that this is a big problem, you know, mental health in the postpartum period. What wasn't clear was what are some of the risk factors, and in particular, what are the effects of pre-pregnancy and antepartum mental health problems on mm-hmm. the risk for postpartum mental health? And we found that if women are in poor mental health before pregnancy, they're almost two times more likely to be in poor mental health in the postpartum period. And if they're in poor mental health during pregnancy, they're 11 times more likely to be in poor mental health in the postpartum period. So clearly, being in poor mental health before, but particularly during pregnancy, is a really big red flag for problems after the baby is born. The other thing that we found was that of the women that experienced postpartum problems, most of them had had these mental health problems before or during pregnancy, which represents really an opportunity for women and their providers to identify and treat these problems so that they can prevent postpartum problems from happening.
Who did how many people did you study and how did you study them?
So this is a national survey, the Medical Expenditure Panel survey. And we studied several thousand pregnant women from 1996 through 2006. And so it's nationally representative of all pregnant women in the United States who had a live birth.
So that's a lot of.
Yes.
So you worked with doctors. I was just interested in how the process that went on for it. So
you know, we do work with mostly other epidemiologists and health services researchers and some clinicians. Yes.
We have, I want to go back to baby blues for a minute. What are the symptoms of baby blues and what kind of the causes for those?
Right. So baby blues are symptoms that happen within the first 10 days after giving birth. And, you know, they can just be feeling off or, you know, feeling like you're not yourself, feeling down, but they go away. That's sort of the key with the baby blues is that those symptoms go away after, you know, a short period of time.
But they don't under the other condition
that we're talking about.
And how long are they likely to last?
So with something like postpartum mood disorders or depression, we're really talking about symptoms that last at least 2 weeks or longer that really are disruptive in terms of one's ability to function.
And certainly they can last a lot longer than 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah, a lot longer. They can last up to actually a year or even 18 months after the baby is born.
Is there a difference among types of, say, women of color, for example? Are they more or less likely than others to have that problem?
We did not find that necessarily in our study, but yes, certainly women who are under a great amount of stress, who are living in poverty, are at greater risk of experiencing these problems. We did find that Asian American women were at an increased risk for experiencing postpartum mental health problems, and we are not sure why that is. It could be because of the experience that they have as living as a person of color, and the constraints that they have as being in terms of being a mom. We're not really sure why. Yeah.
Whitney Witt, our guest today, assistant professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, talking with her today about maternal mental health and its effects on children, and certainly inviting you to join in with your own questions or comments or experiences to share. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Dana and Madison, we turn to you. Thank you for calling, Dana.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Whitney, I would like to thank you for your efforts and your research, because I'm a woman who had postpartum depression about 20 years ago. And at that time, it was really underdiagnosed and misdiagnosed. And so I sort of suffered, and I think in kind my daughter suffered for 4 or 5 months while I was treated for OCD. And anxiety was a primary sort of feature of my depression. And unfortunately, I think perhaps my daughter, suffered because she she developed an anxiety disorder at a fairly early age. And, you know, my thoughts now are, you know, with my untreated anxiety, you know, and perhaps contributing to that, contributed, you know, to her current anxiety or predisposition to it. So that I find that interesting. And I just want to say that my second pregnancy, which was 3 years later, because we knew I was predisposed to depression, my healthcare providers were able, you know, it was much easier. Mm-hmm. It was like, this is a potential risk. And, you know, things were treated in a much quicker fashion. And my second child is very different. He doesn't have anxiety, and maybe they're two different people. So who knows? Yeah. But that's just my comment, and I just want to thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Any comments, Whitney?
Well, I think one thing to keep in mind is, you know, I think it's great that you recognize that there was a problem and you communicated with your provider, and you were able to address that issue in your second pregnancy, and that's beautiful. That's great. That's exactly what women should be doing, is really... Yeah. Communicating with their support network and with their providers about what's going on and not feeling uncomfortable or shy about doing that. So good work on that.
Good for you. And as far as the children, I think kids are...
They're very resilient.
They're very resilient, and they're also very different. And it may...
Birth order may be going... You know, there may be a birth order issue.
I wouldn't hold my head, hang my head, and worry too much about it, Dana. I guess is what I'm saying. I wouldn't feel bad about it. That's for sure. Sarah and Madison, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call.
Hi. Well, I hope I'm not going to be redundant because I didn't hear all of what Dana said, but I was calling because my pregnancy 7 years ago, I was advised by my primary care physician in the. Gynecologist also supported my continuing to take Prozac and Wellbutrin, which I was on before I got pregnant, against depression. And I was advised to keep taking those through my pregnancy, which I had not expected at all. And it was successful. My pregnancy was healthy. My child's healthy. And I think it's not talked about very much that being medicated during pregnancy is... I think there's a knee-jerk reaction that that would be a bad thing or an unsafe thing, and I'm just calling to get the word out there that that's not necessarily true. It's worth talking about.
Yeah,
I couldn't agree more. I think it is really important to talk about and to come up with a plan that's appropriate for you during pregnancy, whether that's medication or psychotherapy. You know, there's definitely treatment out there that's available and accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Sarah, for calling. Appreciate it. An email from Marie in Madison. Can poor mental health on the part of a pregnant mom affect the baby inside the womb?
So that's something we're actually exploring right now. Preliminary analysis suggests that it can. We are looking at birth outcomes among moms who are in poor mental health before pregnancy, and we're finding that there is an association with complications during pregnancy and low birth weight and even non-live birth. So we are seeing that it can affect the outcomes of the pregnancy.
Well, you would think, I mean, someone who's under stress, that's got to have an effect. I mean, they're feeding the baby, that's got to have an effect, I
yes,
would think.
Yes, definitely. And there's some great research here going on campus around looking at the psychobiology of stress during pregnancy and how it affects outcomes.
Shauna and Eau Claire, we turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. So I was, you know, I've had depression for a long time, and I just recently had a baby, and so, you know, the people, my healthcare providers were saying, let us know if you experience any of these symptoms postpartum, and so, you know, I did, and now he's 4 months old, and it just seems like people are, oh, you still feel like that? You know, they're just really dismissive, and it makes it really uncomfortable to try to talk to anyone, because it seems like people just expect you to get over it after, you know, after your kid's a little older.
It's not something you can just get over. So hang in there and reach out more. And if people aren't listening to you, just you need to talk to more people and, you know, or talk to a different provider or other family members or friends. And, you know, what you're experiencing is, you know, it's what you're experiencing. And there is help out there. So
What kinds of help typically? What would be, you know, in Shauna's case, or let's make it more general, in someone like her who's going through this sort of thing? What is the health provider, if the family's not, our friends are mm-hmm. sort of being dismissive? Where do you go? Do you go back to the provider, and what is the provider? How do they help?
So, I mean, the first thing that the provider can do is screen. So just identifying if there's a problem or not. And then once women are screened positive for depression, then they can work with her in deciding what treatment is appropriate or if a referral needs to be made to a mental health specialist. So, it's really very individual based. I think there's no prescription to,
right.
you know, for each, for everyone. But the provider can really identify the problem and then help the woman in making some decisions about where to go from there. And the treatments are usually medication or psychotherapy or both.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So it's important, would be important for Shauna probably to go back to her provider
and explain what's going on, that your symptoms are not subsiding and the treatment, I don't know what kind of treatment you're receiving, but it sounds like your treatment may or may not be working as effectively as you need it to be. And so you need to be thinking about what other options are out there.
Yeah. Good luck, Shauna. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking today about maternal mental health and its effects on children with Whitney Witt, an assistant professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you for listening here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. When you call in at 1-800-642-1234, our very capable producer, Judith Sears Poisson, will be answering the phones and helping you get online. Great to have her there, and thank you for listening in as we visit with Whitney Witt about maternal mental health and its effects on children. I want to take a call from Karen in Pleasant Prairie next. Karen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm so glad that you're having this, dealing with this subject. My daughter went through this, and it was quite incredible. One of my questions is, has there been any evidence that there's a connection between inducing labor, having to have a cesarean as a result, and then an incident of postpartum? This was the incident that we dealt with, and then anecdotally, I had many people tell me if they'd had a cesarean,
mm-hmm.
And this was a case where more or less the doctor wanted, you know, to deliver the baby before it was the holiday weekend type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found a connection between that? My daughter did have a history before. Her provider paid no attention to that whatsoever. And I would say to people, be sure you have the right provider. Don't get discouraged if they poo-poo you. Seek help from someone else. Not all the doctors are knowledgeable about this. And I wish they would start a support group. We could find nothing. We even went as, you know, the whole Milwaukee area and all. There wasn't a support group they could recommend anywhere. And several said to my daughter, you should start one. And she was hardly in the frame of mind that she could be starting a support group.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, has there been a connection with a cesarean at all?
So not that I'm aware of specifically, but we did find that women that experience complications during pregnancy were at an increased risk for mental health problems in the postpartum period.
Okay.
So
a C-section to me would seem to be...
Well, a C-section could result as could be a result of a complication during pregnancy.
And my daughter lost so much blood that she ended up having to have transfusions and so on.
So, yes, I would say that that probably did contribute probably to her risk.
And the reason that I'm concerned is because that, to me, should have been a red flag for her provider then.
Right.
To say, we've got to watch with your history and all, we should be watching.
Absolutely.
The other thing that I would recommend to people, the only thing we found that really helped my daughter as far as reading and that type of thing was Brooke Shields' book. It happened to come out around the same time. And she wrote a story, I think the title's something about rain. That my daughter could relate to. The poor lady that called in, I could feel the pain in her voice when she was talking about people dismiss her and say, aren't you over it, and so on. I mean, I could feel exactly just like what my daughter went through. Just keep trying to find a friend you can talk to about it. Woman to woman, I think, seems to work the best.
Absolutely. And I do want to say that the Wisconsin Department of Health Services has a website listing resources by county for women experiencing or who are at risk for postpartum depression. And I can make that available.
My grandson is going to be six. So we're talking, you know, a lot. I mean, I know things have changed in the past 6 years.
Yeah. And tell you what, we'll post that. Judith is lickety-split quick on getting things posted on our Facebook page. So if do you have that?
We'll just post it. I have a URL.
Yeah, give us a URL.
What's interesting is that on this website, they divide it up by counties, and some counties provide screening on the phone and individual counseling.
Oh.
And then other counties provide home visits to women after they give birth and referrals and even treatment for postpartum depression.
Wow.
So it's a really great resource.
And what's the sort of the basic title of the organization?
Well, this is the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. So it's a state organization.
Judith already has it up. she can work faster than I can think even. So it's great. So if you want to go to our Facebook page, there's all at the Larry Mueller Show. You'll already find
it. Look at that, because she might be in the frame of mind now where she could help someone in a support group.
Yeah.
You know, to say, look, at this is what happened. My son is beautiful, healthy, happy, laughing all the time.
Yep.
One of her big concerns was that that was going to warp her baby. I mean, that was part of the depression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Karen, thank you so much for that call. It's a wonderful call.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I appreciate the what you shared with us today. It's not always easy to share that kind of information. You did a wonderful job and raised some good issues for us. And I'm hoping a lot of people go to the Facebook page. By the way, you don't have to be a member of Facebook to go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. If you just want to see what's there, you can go there and use it. If you're the person who doesn't want to be on Facebook, that's all right. But you can still go to our page without joining Facebook. Let's put it that way. Karen in Appleton, we give you a chance now. Hi, Karen.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, Karen.
Listening to the last speaker, she did a great segue into what I was calling about. I work for an organization called NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There are 37 NAMIs throughout the state. And one of the things that we do best is support. Whenever someone is dealing with any kind of a mental health issue, and even family members who love someone who are dealing with mental health issues. So as I'm listening to the woman who feels as though everyone's telling her to snap out of it, we hear that all the time with people who are living with depression, bipolar disorder, whether it's related to maternity or not. And certainly we see women come in who are pregnant or thinking about getting pregnant. So I really want to put a plug in there that there are those types of support groups out there through your local NAMIs. Unfortunately, we know that the medical providers aren't always the best ones who can provide that level of peer support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the ability to connect to someone who's walked on that journey before you, whether it's with maternity, whether it's, you know, whatever, there's really no price that you can put on that. And so I really wanted to put that plug in. I know in Appleton, we run 8 different support groups out of our NAMI affiliate every week, and we would definitely be a great place for people to check out.
So it's NAMI?
Yep, NAMI, it stands for the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There are large and very active affiliates in Dane County, Greater Milwaukee, Kenosha, Racine, and then we're the biggest affiliate sort of in the upper two-thirds of the state, but certainly there are smaller ones in 37 different places. So, yeah. Again, I can't ever, you know, and you've touched on it, that ability to talk to somebody who's been there, that peer support.
That's so important to I think, for women to not feel alone.
Yep.
And I just want to also just emphasize the importance of social support is key here. You know, in some of our earlier work, we found that women who don't have adequate social support are much more likely to be in poor mental health during pregnancy. And then we know now that poor mental health during pregnancy then increases your risk for postpartum mental health problems. So support throughout the entire process, I think, is so key.
Karen, thanks.
And that issue of pregnancy for people who live with mental illnesses, I know a lot of people really struggle with making that decision because of that potential genetic link. And, you know, there's a lot of ethical considerations around that. But those are the kinds of things that we talk about. So,
well,
what a wonderful resource.
Let's put that out there.
Thank you so much.
We'll post that on the face. I'll bet that NAMI is already in the original post that Judith put up, but we'll put yours up as a second post on our Facebook page, so the Larry Miller Show Facebook page. And by the way, thanks for what you're doing. That's great, Karen.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Karen.
And Bill in Madison up next. Hi, Bill.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. This is more of just a comment, I guess, or than a question. I don't know that I have any question to ask. But, you know, I'm almost 60 years of age, and I suffered from moderate depression all my life, with severe depressive episodes occasionally. And it's gotten worse as I've gotten older, to the point where I go through periods of not being functional much at all. I'm pretty much socially isolated at this point, to the point I'm pretty much, you know, not in the program. My mother had lots of mental health issues as she was growing up, and basically it was like, she was a couple of times hospitalized, It was kind of rough. I mean, she really should not have had children. She just did not have, you know, she really could not handle this. You know, as kids, we were pretty good as kids go, but I definitely grew up with the feeling that me being there was part of the reason why she was having so many problems. Her mother before her had a lot of mental health problems too. So, you know, I decided when I became an adult that I just was going to break the cycle and not have any children. So I just never had any children. And I figured that if it wasn't a genetic thing directly handed down, it was a family thing that some family dynamic issue that was somehow passed down. And I just did not want to
do it.
Burden future generations with that.
Well, Bill, that's a very potent story that you've told there. And it brings me to a question to you, Whitney. Is genetics involved? Is there, I'm sure there has to be some sort of genetic involvement.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, social as well? I mean, is there a combination going
Absolutely.
On here?
Absolutely. There's definitely a genetic link. And there's also an environmental or social social exposure can definitely increase the risk. And then what people are interested in now is really looking at the interaction between the genetics and the environment, or epigenetics, of looking at do certain genes get turned on in the context of certain environments that increase people's risk for mental health problems. So it's a very active area of science right now.
Hmm. Bill, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Ramsey in Wales, Wisconsin. We go to you next. Hi, Ramsey.
Hi there. I hear a lot about all these support groups, and I have to tell you, from being there with gestational depression and then postpartum that went on till my child was 18 months, you're in such a downward spiral that I found that I couldn't even help myself, and that if it wasn't finally was a friend, my husband didn't help. He just, I think, decided this was the new me. I didn't get out of bed. I didn't, you know, I wasn't my high energy self anymore. And if it wasn't for, you know, just a slip of a tongue of a friend, I wouldn't even thought I had any kind of depression. And this was just my new nasty life.
Yeah. It's often not talked about, and thank goodness for your friend for speaking up and saying something and that triggering you to recognize it. I think there is a lot of stigma around mental health issues, whether it's in the postpartum period or throughout the life course. And I think as a society, we need to start, you know, really addressing that.
Yeah. What are the... Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ramsey.
I was going to say that I think the biggest problem for me was that I felt like, why didn't people around me who knew me saw this big change, and nobody did anything. Here mm-hmm. I was this high energy person, very creative, and all of a sudden I'm not even getting out of bed. Mm-hmm. And this went on for so long. And I guess, you know, you hear about the support groups, but when you're, and that woman, Shauna, I mean, she needs somebody to take her by the hand and actually lead her to the doctor's office.
Yeah. Yeah. And you agree with that, Whitney?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, I think our support network needs to sort of recognize are we not acting normally, and talk to us, and we need to be communicative too. That and say to people around us that we're not feeling good, or you know, not feeling ourselves, and ask for help. So I think it has to happen both ways, and then I think providers have to ask about it. We need to be asking about it in primary care, in the OBGYN setting. You know, in pediatrics, they need to be asking about it really at every point of care. One of the concerns, I think, in terms of the continuum of care is that women, after they give birth, don't necessarily go back to see their OBGYN immediately. And so there's a period of time there where there's, you know, the contact that they're having is with a pediatrician and not necessarily with anyone, with any other provider. And so I think we need to be working with pediatrics and, trying to address some of these issues, because, you know, the point of care there is really for the child, and that may be an opportunity for the pediatrician to ask mom, how's she doing? Mm-hmm. So
that is exactly what happened with our pediatrician. We had a top pediatrician. I would be crying in the office saying, I can't take this, I can't take it, and crying each time, and nothing was ever, nothing was picked up. I have to say that it was, taking Zoloft and my husband taking a week off, after speaking to the psychiatrist, and it was like after taking that Zoloft for even just a couple of days, everything seemed clear. I looked out the window, and it was just like, oh my gosh, everything isn't a fog anymore. It was crystal clear and beautiful, and
wow.
And as far as my child, our little boy now is 8, and he is a very sensitive child. He does, if I'm sick or he thinks something is wrong, he definitely has, stomach aches and things like that. I have to be careful of what I say in front of him. But on the other hand, maybe that's his path in life. I believe that maybe the sensitivity will lead him somewhere else. Maybe he's, this is just part of his deal for this life.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ramsey, for calling. I appreciate your call very much. And she's right. And if you break out in blotches all over your face or you break your arm or something, people run right away to the doctor. But it's there's that, it's not, I don't know if it's a stigma or you just think, you know, it's not a broken leg, you can get over it.
Right. So there's definitely, I think we need to start thinking of this as a health condition. It is a health condition.
Right.
Not a mental health condition necessarily.
No, it's a health condition.
It's a health condition and it's treatable just like a lot of other health conditions. And I think if we start thinking, changing our mindset and thinking about it in that way, as a society, we can approach it very differently.
Well, let's. So, what should family members look for, and then what should they do if there's? I mean, what should they look for?
So
we got some good ideas there. If you don't want to get out of, if the person doesn't want to get out of bed and is crying a lot,
right? And if this is going on for more than 2 weeks. And if there's any suicidal ideation, but we're, you know, definitely that needs to be quickly dealt with. But feelings of tearfulness or despondency, lack of sleep or more sleep than normal. And a lot of this is difficult in the context of taking care of a newborn, right? So particularly around the sleep. But really, signs are like difficulty concentrating, loss of appetite or any kind of change in weight, loss of pleasure in sort of normal activities, those kinds of things. But what we're really talking about are these kinds of symptoms that are lasting longer than 2 weeks.
And when those symptoms last longer than 2 weeks, we do what, do you think?
I think the spouse or friend or family member or the woman herself needs to get in touch with her provider and let them know what's going on and ask for help and then go in and get screened for depression or for, you know, mental health problems in general. And then decide along with a family member and the provider about what to do next. You know, what kind of treatment should I go forward with? Should I get on antidepressants? Should I go talk to someone? Should I do both?
And, you know, the good thing that one of the great positive things that I heard, even in some pretty sad stories today, and I again thank everybody for calling and sharing, because sometimes those kinds of stories are really hard for people to share. But the good positive thing I take from it is that a lot of people were helped and were able to turn it around with the proper care. Maybe it's the proper medication, maybe it's the proper therapy, or some combination thereof.
That's absolutely right, Larry. I mean, this is a very treatable condition, and with proper attention and care, this can be dealt with.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Whitney, for being with us today. The time flew by. Again, your study, is there, do you have a title for that? Can people look your study up?
Yes, and we can put that up on the website.
Yeah. All right, we'll put that up. We'll post that on the Facebook page, the Larry Miller Show Facebook page. There's a lot there posted for this particular show, but I think it's all very worthwhile. And thank you so much.
And thank you so much for your attention to this really important issue.
Well, maybe we can do this again.
I would like that very much.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. Whitney Witt is an assistant professor in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. And thanks, everybody, for who called in and for your comments as well. And it's something, you know what, we'll deal with this again. We'll talk about it again. We're going to switch gears on you, though, coming up next, and talk about something in Milwaukee that's going on. It's called the Makerspace Project, and it's a do-it-yourself movement, and the two organizers of it are with me, and they'll be with you in about 20 seconds here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.